I don't know. Swan must have a secretary. He's an assistant director or something. He must have a whole staff. All they're saying is that he's temporarily out of the office. Let me try. He took Swan's number from her and hit 9 for a line. Dialed. Heard the connection go through. Heard Swan's phone ringing on the other end. And ringing. And ringing. No answer. Someone answered a minute ago, Nagley said. It's his direct line. No answer. He held the phone at his ear and listened to the patient electronic purr. 10 times. 15, 20, 30. He hung up, checked the number and tried again, same result. Weird. Where the hell is he? He checked the paper again, name and number. The address line was blank. Where is this place? He asked. I'm not sure. Does it have a name? New Age Defense Systems. That's how they've been answering. What kind of a name is that for a weapons manufacturer? Like, they kill you with kindness? They play pan pipe music until you save them the trouble and slit your wrists? He dialed information. Information told him there was no listing for New Age Defense Systems anywhere in the United States. He hung up. Can corporations be unlisted, too? Nagley said, I guess so. In the defense business, certainly. And they're new. We have to find them. They must have a physical plant somewhere, at least an office, so Uncle Sam can send them checks. Okay, we'll add that to the list. After the visit to Mrs. Franz. No, before, Reacher said. Offices close. Widows are always around. So Nagley called her guy in Chicago and told him to track down a physical address for New Age Defense Systems. From the half of the conversation Reacher could hear, it seemed like the best way to proceed was to hack into FedEx's computer, or UPS's, or DHL's. Everyone received packages, and couriers needed street addresses. They couldn't use post office boxes. They had to hand stuff across the transom to actual people and get signatures in return. Get cell phone numbers, too, Reacher called. For the others? Nagley covered the phone. He's been on that for 3 days. It isn't easy. Then she hung up and walked to the window, looked out and down at the people parking cars. So, now we wait, she said. They waited less than 20 minutes, and then one of Nagley's laptops pinged to announce an email incoming from Chicago. Chapter 10. The email from Nagley's guy in Chicago contained New Age's address, courtesy of UPS. Or actually, 2 addresses. One in Colorado, one in East L.A. Makes sense, she said. Distributed manufacture. Safer that way in case of attack. Bullshit, Reacher said. It's about 2 lots of senators. 2 lots of pork. Republicans up there, Democrats down here, they get their snouts and the trough both ways around. Swan wouldn't have gone there if that was all they were into. Reacher nodded. Maybe not. Nagley opened the map and they checked the East L.A. address. It was out past Echo Park, past Dodger Stadium, somewhere in the no-man's land between South Pasadena and East L.A. proper.
That's a long way, Nagley said. It could take forever. Rush hour has started.
Already?
Rush hour in L.A. started 30 years ago. It'll finish when the oil runs out. Or the oxygen. But whatever, we won't make it over there before they close. So it might be better to save New Age for tomorrow and go see Mrs. Franz today.
Like you said in the first place. You're playing me like a violin.
She's closer, is all. And important.
Where is she?
Santa Monica.
Franz lived in Santa Monica?
Not on the ocean. But still, I bet it's nice.
It was nice. Way nicer than it could have been. It was a small bungalow on a small street, trapped halfway between the 10 and the Santa Monica airport, about 2 miles inland. On the face of it, not a prime real estate location. But it was a beautifully presented house.
Nagley drove past it twice, looking for a place to park. It was a tiny, symmetrical structure, two bay windows with the front door between them, an overhanging roof with a front porch below, twin rocking chairs on the porch. Some stone, some Tudor beams, some arts and crafts influences, some Frank Lloyd Wright, Spanish tiles. A real confusion of styles in one very small building. But it worked. It had a lot of charm, and it was totally immaculate. The paint was perfect. It gleamed. The windows were clean. They shone. The yard was tidy. Green lawn, clipped. Bright flowers, no weeds. Short, black-topped driveway, smooth as glass and swept clean. Calvin Franz had been a thorough and meticulous man, and Reacher felt he could see an expression of his old friend's whole personality displayed right there in a little piece of real estate. Eventually, a pretty lady two streets away pulled her Toyota Camry out of a curbside spot, and Nagley swerved the Mustang right in after her. She locked it up, and they walked back together. It was late afternoon, but still faintly warm. Reacher could smell the ocean. He asked, "How many widows have we been to see?"
"Too many."
"Where do you live?"
"Lake Forest, Illinois."
"I've heard of that. It's supposed to be a nice place."
"It is."
"Congratulations."
"I worked hard for it."
They turned together into Franz's street and then into his driveway. They slowed a little on the short walk to the door. Reacher wasn't sure what they were going to find. In the past, he had dealt with widows a lot fresher than one of 17 days' vintage. Very often, they hadn't even known they were widows until he had shown up and told them they were. He wasn't sure what difference the 17 days were going to make. Didn't know where in the process she was going to be. "What's her name?"
"Angela,"
Nagley said. "Okay."
"The kid is called Charlie, a boy."
"Okay."
"4 years old."
"Okay." They stepped up on the porch, and Nagley found a bell push and laid a fingertip on it, gently, briefly, respectfully, as if the electric circuit could sense deference. Reacher heard the sound of a muted bell inside the house, and then nothing. He waited. About a minute and a half later, the door was opened, apparently by nobody. Then Reacher looked down and saw a little boy stretching up to the handle. The handle was high, and the boy was small, and his stretch was so extreme that the arc of the door's travel was pulling him off his tiptoes. "You must be Charlie," Reacher said.
"I am,"
the boy said. "I was a friend of your dad's."
"My dad's dead."
"I know. I'm very sad about that."
"Me too."
"Is it okay to be opening the door all by yourself?"
"Yes. It's okay."
He looked exactly like Calvin Franz. The resemblance was uncanny. The face was the same. The body shape was the same. The short legs, the low waist, the long arms. The shoulders were just skin and bone under a child's t-shirt. But somehow they already hinted at the simian bulk they would carry later. The eyes were Franz's own. Exactly. Dark, cool, calm, reassuring, like the boy was saying, "Don't worry. Everything will turn out fine." Nagley asked him,
"Charlie, is your mom home?"
The boy nodded.
"She's in back,"
he said. He let the handle go and stepped away to let them enter. Nagley went first. The house was too small for any one part of it to be really in back of any other part. It was like one generous room divided into four quadrants. Two small bedrooms on the right with a bathroom between, Reacher guessed. A small living room in the left front corner, and a small kitchenette behind it. That was all. Tiny, but beautiful. Everything was off-white and pale yellow. There were flowers and vases. The windows were shaded with white wooden shutters. Floors were dark polished wood. Reacher turned and closed the door behind him, and the street noise disappeared and silence clamped down over the house. A good feeling, once upon a time, he thought.
Now, maybe not so good. A woman stepped out of the kitchen area from behind a half-wide dividing wall so abbreviated that it couldn't have offered accidental concealment. Reacher felt she must have gone and hidden behind it, deliberately, when the doorbell rang. She looked a lot younger than him, a little younger than Nagley, younger than Franz had been. She was a tall woman, white blonde, blue-eyed like a Scandinavian, and thin. She was wearing a light V-neck sweater, and the bones showed in the front of her chest. She was clean and made up and perfumed, and her hair was brushed, perfectly composed, but not relaxed. Reacher could see wild bewilderment around her eyes, like a fright mask worn under the skin. There was awkward silence for a moment, and then Nagley stepped forward and said, "Angela, I'm Francis Nagley. We spoke on the phone." Angela Franz smiled in an automatic way and offered her hand. Nagley took it and shook it briefly, and then Reacher stepped forward and took his turn. He said, "I'm Jack Reacher. I'm very sorry for your loss." He took her hand, which felt cold and fragile in his.
"You've used those words more than a few times, haven't you?"
"I'm afraid so," Reacher said.
"You're on Calvin's list. You were an MP just like him."
Reacher shook his head. "Not just like him. Not nearly as good."
"You're very kind."
"It's how it was. I admired him tremendously."
"He told me about you. All of you, I mean. Many times. Sometimes I felt like a second wife. Like he had been married before. To all of you."
"It's how it was," Reacher said again. "The service was like a family. If you were lucky, that is, and we were."
"Calvin said the same thing."
"I think he got even luckier afterward."
Angela smiled again, automatically.
"Maybe. But his luck ran out, didn't it?"
Charlie was watching them, Franz's eyes half open, appraising. Angela said,
"Thank you very much for coming."
"Is there anything we can do for you?" Reacher asked.
"Can you raise the debt?"
Reacher said nothing.
"The way he used to talk about you, I wouldn't be surprised if you could."
Nagley said, "We could find out who did it. That's what we were good at. And that's as close as we can come to bringing him back, in a manner of speaking."
"But it won't actually bring him back." "No, it won't. I'm very sorry." "Why are you here?"
"To give you our condolences."
"But you don't know me. I came later. I wasn't a part of all that."
Angela moved away toward the kitchen. Then she changed her mind and turned back and squeezed sideways between Reacher and Nagley and sat down in the living room, laid her palms on the arms of her chair. Reacher saw her fingers moving, just a slight, imperceptible flutter, like she was typing or playing an invisible piano in her sleep.
"I wasn't part of the group," she said. "Sometimes I wished I had been. It meant so much to Calvin. He used to say, 'You do not mess with the special investigators.' He used it like a catchphrase all the time. He would be watching football, and the quarterback would get sacked, something real spectacular, and he would say, 'Yeah, baby, you do not mess with the special investigators.' He would say it to Charlie. He would tell Charlie to do something, and Charlie would moan, and Calvin would say, 'Charlie, you do not mess with the special investigators.'"
Charlie looked up and smiled.
"You do not mess,"
he said, in a little piping voice, but with his father's intonation. And then he stopped, as if the longer words were too hard for him to say. Angela said,
"You're here because of a slogan, aren't you?"
"Not really," Reacher said. "We're here because of what lay behind the slogan. We cared about one another, that's all. I'm here because Calvin would have been there for me if the shoe was on the other foot."
"Would he have been?"
"I think so."
"He gave up all of that when Charlie was born. No pressure from me, but He wanted to be a father. He gave it all up, apart from the easy, safe stuff.